College admissions process is a stressful one for students and their families. And like any process, it has some periods of time that are more concentrated and more stressful than others. Spring of the senior year of high school is one of those times. It is the season of college acceptances and college decisions. Most students apply to a number of colleges, sometimes up to 10 or more, and most receive multiple acceptance letters. After months or even years of students wondering, will any college accept me? High school seniors suddenly find themselves facing a new question. Which college offers should I accept? To help students and their parents to answer that key question, we present Crunch Time, helping your child pick the right college. I am your host, Nathan Gregory. Joining me in our Washington, D.C. studios today are Mrs. Marty O'Connell, Executive Director of Colleges That Change Lives, Steve Goodman, founder of TopColleges.com and co-author of College Admissions Together, It Takes a Family. And lastly, Mr. Jim Boyle, President of College Parents of America. Thank you, Marty, Steve, and Jim, and welcome. Let's get right to it. Just admissions decisions at many colleges and universities were released, and as a parent, how should you help your child with his or her decisions and where they should go to school?
I think the most important thing about this is to realize that there should be joy in the process. So here they are. They were worried about whether they were going to get in, and now they've gotten in. So first, take time to be joyful about this, and then start to ask the most important question, not which one, but what am I going to do when I actually get there, to make sure that the students are approaching this thinking about the end game as opposed to the starting point. This is critical because it will indeed help them with the fit that they need. They need to find out about the communities that they'll be in, the community of learners they'll be surrounded by. And this is far more important than the way that sometimes gets approached in looking at whether or not the major is the correct one. Finding the good fit that matches that student's personality and their family beliefs and backgrounds is really a critical part of this process.
I would agree. I think one thing to remember, though, is that looking back at the admissions time, which is only several months ago, some students change a lot during the period between the beginning of senior year and the spring of senior year. So it's important to revisit some of those key issues that caused you to apply to certain colleges to begin with. For instance, and this may seem common sense, but making sure that the school that you ultimately decide to attend actually offers what you want to study. Some students don't study the curriculum close enough at various colleges and universities, and they may go off to college thinking they're going to study journalism, only to find that the school doesn't offer journalism. So that's a sort of a common sense thing, but I think important for a student to look at. And then, of course, I think it is worth noting that cost can be an overriding factor for some families. So it's important to compare the admissions offers that you receive if you've applied for financial aid and look at them with the cost factor in mind, and to not necessarily take it as a given that it will be more expensive to attend one school than another. But if you really are determined that you want to attend a particular school, and the offer of financial aid that you received is not what you hoped it might be, to then develop a strategy for trying to see if the school might be able to offer you some additional funds. And we can get more into that as we continue our discussion.
And my take on this is that you really want to think about what your objectives are. What is the student's objectives? What are the family's objectives? One of the things that I know we all agree here is that this should be a student-centered process. However, the question is, how do parents have an influence, and how much influence should parents have? And now that we are at this crunch time where parents have about a month to decide and students have about a month to decide this pretty crucial decision, it seems to me that the thing that we ought to be thinking about is how do we empower students and families to have the discussions that are difficult internally? So, for instance, Jim alluded to the issue of cost. Well, I had a meeting with a family this past week where the dad basically kept saying that he was concerned about the cost, and the mom kept saying that she was concerned about the right fit, and the student kept trying to hide underneath the table. And so that's a reality that a lot of families go through. And so, in fact, my whole book is about giving people the means to have reasonable discussions about how to resolve differences at this stage. because not everybody's going to agree. Just because you married someone doesn't mean you agree with your spouse on everything. Just because you're the son or the daughter of someone doesn't mean that you agree with your parents all the time. So everybody's got different things that they're looking at. So when you're thinking about your choices today, I advise people to think about, are you looking for a specific major? Are you looking for a specific location? Are you looking for a specific type of social life? What is it that you're looking for? Because Marty alluded to the issue of a great fit before, and she's right. But the question is, what is that great fit? Some people say that they want a great fit, but what they really mean is a great fit as long as the school is called Princeton. Other people say that they want a great fit as long as my girlfriend or my boyfriend goes there. So you as a, so for moms and dads listening to this, I really think you want to think about what can you do to empower your student to kind of think about these issues and also think about yourself. What can you live with and what can you not live with through this decision?
No, excellent points. Definitely. And here's a question that was posed to us. My daughter says that she wants to make the choice herself. Should I have any input? Is there a reasonable way for me to make meaningful input without infringing on her independence? Marty.
I think so often I hear students who say, my parents are not listening to me. I found a college that I fell in love with, and it's not the one that they had on their list, but it's certainly at the top of my list. I think the best way to resolve these conflicts is for the families to realize that they both have a lot to offer in the process. The parents know the students better than anyone else, and the students do have their gut feelings that they're getting in touch with as they visit colleges and as they look at websites and learn more about the colleges. I think the important thing to do is to have the parents sit down to say, here are the things that I think of about you when I see you at the colleges on my list, and here's why. And ask the students to do the same thing. What's on your list? What was it about visiting the place and meeting the students and touring the campus that appealed to you that maybe I'm missing since I don't see that as the right choice? Often I ask parents to say, why is it that you are so determined to have your child go to a certain college that they don't want to attend? And sometimes they say to me, I just always thought about them being there, and now I'm embarrassed because they have a place on their list that I've never heard of, and I'm scared that they might not meet with success and happiness with this choice. And that's a really critical piece of this, to look ahead to say, what do we mean by that, and what will be the activities they can do when they're part of that campus that will make sure the parents have a comfort level that once they graduate, they will have that chance at happiness and success. And that's where we get into looking at outcomes, looking at what happens between the time the student arrives and when they graduate, and not just those entering statistics that you often find drive ratings and rankings magazines and are not really very useful in making these decisions.
At College Parents of America, we tend to attract families that are wanting to be very involved in their college admissions process of their son or daughter. But one of the things I caution them about is that it really is the student's decision, and that the parent should look at themselves more as a coach or mentor staying on the sidelines, but it's the student who's in the game. And so much as they can think back to the student when they were younger and in the elementary school years, and maybe they went to those soccer games and there was that urge to sort of jump out onto the field and help out your child if they lost the ball or got injured, you have to also resist the urge to get in the game when it comes to college admissions. It's the student who is in the game, the student who will be living their life for the next 4 to 6 years, the student who will then become an alum of the schools that of the school that he or she ultimately picks. And so the parent should be there to bounce ideas off of, to answer questions, to provide guidance when asked, but the parents should definitely not guide the process. I mean, one of the high-profile college searches that we all see these days involve athletes. Some athletes get so well-known in high school that their decision to attend a college is carried live on ESPNU, and often in the room is the parent. Now, you'd think that these are parents who should be involved more than anyone in helping their child to select the right college. But I think the smart parents in those athletic situations are ones who let their child make the ultimate choice and provide feedback. And the same should apply for parents of all stripes, parents who are helping their child make a decision for all of the various reasons that we've discussed.
And I think part of the reason that this is so crucial is a statistic that's going to scare a lot of people. 25% of all students who begin four-year colleges will end up transferring. So let me repeat that. 25% of all students who begin a four-year college will end up transferring. Now, why is that? Well, that's generally, in my view, because students picked a school that wasn't the right fit for them. Now, of course, it gets back to the issue of what's the right fit, but it really gets to the issue of the fact that it's really important for students to feel empowered that they're making the decision, and also that students are making a decision based on the factors that they think. Now, I think there's something that we might want to chat about for a second. Marty, you alluded to the fact that what happens if a mom or dad is unhappy about the way a student is looking at something. And often I have those discussions in my office where let's assume the student is very clear what he or she wants, but the mom or dad inherently disagrees with the way that the student is making that decision or that analysis. Well, then it really comes down to a real discussion. Who really gets to make the ultimate choice? I think that of the people who are here in the studio right now, we all come down on the side that the students should be the one who ultimately makes that decision. However, I have worked with many moms and dads over the years who say, well, Steve, that's really interesting, and I really appreciate your opinion, but I'm the dad or the mom. I'm the one who's going to be paying the $200,000, and I'm going to make this decision. And my student is 17 years old, and I don't want my student to make this mistake. I agree philosophically with where Marty's coming from on that, that students really ought to be driving this. But let's face it, sometimes there are those difficult discussions that that families have. And if you are a mom or dad listening to this and you're inclined to do that with your son or daughter, I would just urge you respectfully to think about whether or not that's a healthy thing to do. I'm not saying that $200,000 isn't a lot of money, and I'm not saying that you at age 40 don't know more than your son or daughter at age 17. But if we know that statistically that a quarter of all students who start college will end up transferring, I think that that means that students really should be at the center of this to make sure that your student is going to succeed and end up where he or she can succeed.
And I think a lot of parents or our peers have known people that have experienced that themselves. Dad said, you can go anywhere you want. The check's going here. You make the decision, and
right.
And sometimes it works out, and sometimes it doesn't. And
sometimes it plays into that 25% transfer rate.
Exactly, so. And sometimes that could increase to 50 as well. Another question that was posed to us was, my husband has flatly ruled out a number of colleges that won't take my son to visit certain campuses. He doesn't think they are good enough schools. I'm not sure about that. What should I do? Interesting.
We live in a name brand driven society. And so if people haven't heard of something, they assume that it can't be any good because I've never heard of it. And I try to turn this around and get people to think about the fact of if there are 4,000 colleges, a little bit more than that, that people have to choose from. And just think of how many high schools there are in this country. And if admissions deans and directors didn't choose to read applications of students whose high school they've never heard of, those students wouldn't have an opportunity to be admitted very many places often. So I try to get the students to say, you don't want anyone to do that to you because they don't know who you are and who your high school is. And the same thing with the parents. And step back to say, okay, if I haven't heard of this place and maybe that's the reason why I think it's not any good, let me start to really delve into what's happening at this college and look at the statistics and the outcomes. Ask for the career office to provide you with what students are doing when they graduate. This is a wonderful day and age to be able to use online resources to really dig for information that wasn't readily available years ago. Catalogs that you couldn't get until after you were enrolled are now available online. So you can read about departmental resources and you can go to websites and look for parents' associations on the campuses and talk to parents of current students to find out how they feel about the school. And you can look at academic departments if there's an interest there and find out if the students are indeed able to get into the graduate and professional schools of their choice or getting their first-time job.
I think that, you know, that's the kind of discussion that really should take place well before a student even applies to different colleges. You know, right now we're sitting in the spring of senior year of high school for what we think will be the listeners for this program. And at this point, the student has applied to 6, 8, 10, perhaps more schools. Ideally, conversations about those schools have occurred, and parents should not have an attitude right now, there's no way I'm going to support that. So if those conversations that are occurring, for those of you who are parents of younger children, I encourage you to have those conversations much, much, much earlier so you don't find yourself in that similar kind of a trap situation. Meanwhile, when the offers come in from the various colleges, the student should revisit the reasons they applied to the college to begin with and remind their parents of that and encourage the parent to do further research to take advantage of the kind of resources that Marty was alluding to. The decision about a college must be the student's. And while Marty alluded to the brand name interests that many parents have, that brand name will certainly become very well known in a household once a student is happy and succeeding at that school. The bumper stickers will appear, and the parents' circle of friends and family will certainly know about that college if they haven't heard of it already.
And my take on that is one of my favorite things to say when people ask me that question is the issue of Bangkok. And people say, well, I've never heard of a particular college, so how good can it be? And then I usually ask somebody, well, do you prefer East Bangkok or West Bangkok? And they look at me like I'm crazy. And I say, well, which do you prefer, East Bangkok or West Bangkok? And they say, I don't know. And I said, but I bet the people in Bangkok know whether East Bangkok is nicer than West Bangkok or vice versa. And the same thing is true here. Just because you don't know something doesn't mean it's not so. There are some wonderful colleges out there that people don't know a lot about. There are wonderful high schools. Marty alluded to the number of high schools. We have 25,000 high schools in the United States. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I can't tell you the name of every single high school in the United States. That doesn't mean that a high school isn't good just because we all don't know about it. And the same thing is true with a college. You can check the quality of the school by looking at what the resources that they offer. But I wouldn't necessarily write off a school straight away because you've never heard of it. I think you owe it to your son or daughter to encourage your son or daughter to at least do the research into those schools. And as Jim mentioned before, you should have done that hopefully before in the other stage of the process. Uh-huh. But if you haven't, this is not a bad time to do it.
Very true. And obviously, you know, no family is going to agree 100% across the board on everything. And it is to equate this to a high school student, it's like a research paper. I mean, you have your steps and processes for this whole thing, and you have your approach and your parents have theirs, and you need to come together because you are a family. I actually have a friend whose oldest daughter is really excited about going away to school, and she is adamant that her younger brother attend the same school. I really have no idea, but I mean, do you believe this is a healthy approach for siblings to attend the same college or anyone?
I think that's completely dependent on the family dynamic. I've seen twins and triplets attend the same college in my years as 30 years almost doing college admissions work as a dean. I've seen that happen, and I've seen families where the first eldest student got in, and one of the criteria was, I don't want my siblings to come here with me because I want to have a chance to be independent and not have someone in my family here. And the same thing from younger siblings. They finally want the chance not maybe to follow in someone else's shadow. So there's every kind of relationship under the sun where family dynamics work. And so I think the students, the families know how to do this and ask those questions. And if it comes down to needing a connection like that, there's some more questions that need to be asked beyond the kind of college, but also what's going on with this dynamic if a brother or sister wants to make sure that their sibling is there with them. There may be another kind of conversation to have happen about their security or insecurity as they start to look at colleges.
I agree with Marty, and I think another factor I would encourage parents to look at when there are multiple children, especially in college at the same time, is the effect on potential financial aid. The expected family contribution that results from a family filling out the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, is just that, an expected family contribution. So if there are two or more children in college at the same time, then that effectively halves or cuts to a third. If there are three children in college at the same time, the individual expectation for payment for each of those students. So families, I think I often hear them thinking, bemoaning the fact that they might have more than one student in college at the same time because they're not aware of this factor when it comes to financial aid. So that's some glimmer of hope for those families who are worried about the cost of college. And also, sometimes, in rare instances, The fact that there is more than one child at a particular school, there may be an opportunity to negotiate with that school for additional financial aid, given the fact that you have more than one student attending.
And there's another thing in terms of having two students at the same university, which I think is important to point out, is the travel costs effectively become a little bit less as well, depending on where the school is. But Jim, I think you're absolutely right in that your bargaining leverage is a little bit higher when the two students are at the same school. However, again, this gets to the original discussion we had a few minutes ago, which is what's driving this? Is cost driving this, or is the right fit driving this? If what we're trying to do is save some money, well, there are a lot of things you can do. Not go to college, not do a lot of things to save money. But I think money is one of the many components that we want to take into account. So I think that if a student wants to be with his or her brother or sister, I think that's great. If they don't want to be, that's fine too.
Excellent points. And, you know, you sparked upon something, Steve, that regarding tuition and costs. And currently in America, there is a slight recession going on, or a major, depending on where you stand in the socioeconomic spectrum. And college tuition can be a very large burden looming in front of a parent. And do parents, what are y'all's feelings regarding parents disclosing the family finances or the financial capability regarding their child's choice for school? I mean, if you have a parent that is behind their student 100 or their child 100% of where they want to go, but financially it might be difficult. What are your feelings regarding just talking about that?
I think talking about money with our children is a very difficult topic for many families. And so often it doesn't happen early enough in this process. And it's another one of those discussions that should take place at the start of the search process so that the student understands what the family is capable of and they're not shocked at the end. And this doesn't mean that the search has to be completely driven, because it's very difficult to know what the price of a college is. You can look at the sticker price when you look at college catalogs and websites, but not be certain actually what you will end up paying, because merit and financial need-based scholarships come into play during the process. But it doesn't mean that that conversation between the family doesn't happen early. It should happen so that the family can say, this is how much we have set aside for you. If there are other children, here's how much we have for all of you to go to college. And this has to come into play as we make our decision. So it's not actually saying, here's the exact amount of money. It's saying, this plays into it. We don't have unlimited funds to help you do this. And that way, when the springtime comes, as it will here in the next couple of weeks, with these decisions arriving in the mail, and then trying to decide about whether or not it is affordable to attend, the student won't be shocked to find out that the parents really did have to talk about cost as part of this. Earlier, both Jim and Steve mentioned the words negotiate and bargain. And doing college admissions for almost three decades, I will tell you that those are the kinds of words that sometimes get the backup of financial aid officers or deans of admissions. And yet, from an outside perspective, those are common words that we use when we are trying to make large purchases. I encourage families instead to say to financial aid officers and to admissions deans, I don't understand what is happening here. I have four admit letters and four financial aid packages, and they're very different. So could you please explain to me why yours says this and the others say this, or why you've offered me a merit scholarship of this amount and someone else offered me this one? Could you explain why that's happening? I don't know any admission or financial aid counselor who would mind asking that kind of question and helping a family. When you start to say, I'm going to bargain with you, then people get very suspicious about what's going on. So it's just a nuance in the language that really can, I think, be helpful as families move through this process.
That's a great point. I when we're talking on this topic, I have to remember there was a TV ad a couple of years ago, one of the financial service companies, I think it was Fidelity, in which the student receives acceptance letters. And the entire family is gathered around him and hugs and smiles all the way. And then the father retreats to his den and begins to literally pull his hair out as he looks at the numbers that he's facing and paying for that student's college education. And that's an example of a family that did not have the conversation early enough, so that there was a greater awareness among everyone in the family about the impact of finances ultimately on the decision. So I would echo Marty that you should have those conversations early on, The reality is families find it difficult to talk about money. Many families do. But they should get over that hurdle, because the pain that might be caused by having a frank decision about finances before the process starts could be much, much worse if that conversation is delayed. And a student who is dreaming about attending a particular school sees those dreams thwarted by the fact that mom or dad says it's just not going to be possible. That phrase, it's just not going to be possible, is difficult to utter. It's difficult to hear. But it should, if it is to be used, it should take place early on before the applications are submitted. But Marty makes a great point. You really never know exactly what a college is going to cost. And that's why I think it's great to keep your options open. It's very difficult to know sitting in the fall what financial aid offers you might receive in the spring. Colleges this year have been changing their financial aid budgets based on a number of extraneous factors going on with the economy. And so the colleges, I think, you know, are going into this admission season in particular with a wide open field when it comes to their financial aid budgets. And they are trying to make the best use of those budgets as possible in order to help students come to their school.
And Jim, I think that's a great point in terms of this being an ongoing discussion. It's a difficult discussion to talk about money regardless of when you have it, whether it's at 9 in the morning or at 9 at night. It's difficult to have a discussion about money with your children in the fall or in the spring. It's going to be difficult no matter when you have it. And let's face it, it's also expensive whether or not you have the discussion today or tomorrow. So it's expensive no matter what happens. But I think that it's important to have this as an ongoing discussion, because we don't, absent the early decision process, for regular decision choices, we really don't know with 100% certainty what every student is going to get in terms of admissions letters and or in terms of financial aid offers, and what how much of that financial aid package is going to be pure grants. And so I realize it puts off the super duper painful part of the discussion. But if you can be open to having some of this discussion a little bit along the way, what you're doing is you're giving your student the ability to apply to a group of schools without preventing them from applying early on. This is, of course, for people who are listening to this whose kids are in 9th, 10th, and 11th grade. So what I'm recommending is you don't say to your son or daughter, you know, I don't want to apply to this school because the sticker price is X, and therefore you can't go, and therefore you can't apply, because I don't want to be in this position of not being able to afford what you want 7 months down the road. What I recommend is that you do exactly the opposite of that. Encourage your student to apply to a wide variety of schools, because some of those schools may actually come up with some reasonable financial aid packages that will make it possible for you to attend, for your son or daughter to attend. And I think Marty's point is well taken in terms of negotiating. You know, we negotiate, but you don't call it negotiations. You know, there are a lot of things we do, but we call it something else. I think we call them euphemisms in our society. But that's okay. You're allowed to politely say, can you please revisit this financial aid package and let's look at what we've got here. I think that what you want to do, though, is not close the doors on options until you absolutely have to. And that would be my message.
I think the other thing that you have to realize is that people do make mistakes. So occasionally there are letters that go out with the wrong amounts in them. And so calling a college and saying, is this, I want to make sure this is correct, but I also don't understand it, is a perfectly acceptable form of action as you're trying to find out what you might do to get a different kind of financial aid offer. The other piece I wanted to add in, I've been talking and having these difficult conversations, is that scheduling a time to do it is really critical. Kids are busy and parents are busy, and I hear this all the time. I don't have time to do this admissions and financial aid process well. And so I encourage families to write it on the calendar. Select a time. If it's 8 o'clock on a Sunday night for an hour, that's going to be your time to talk about the college search process starting in the beginning of the junior year, and keep that time slot right on through making that decision on May 1st where to attend. This way, it doesn't creep into every portion of a student and parent's life. And students say to me, I feel like I can't get away from mom and dad. Every time I turn around, they're asking me about this college process and talking to me about scholarships. And if you can say, mom and dad, I'll see you at 8 o'clock on Sunday night. And that is going to also increase the chances that this will go in a positive manner and maintain a family dynamic that's appreciated also if there's younger siblings involved who don't want to hear this conversation all the time.
So essentially, it is beneficial to open a dialogue with the financial aid offices of the universities or colleges that have sent your children acceptance letters. Obviously, using the term negotiate for more could possibly put somebody in a defensive posture, but it doesn't hurt to even call to confirm that what has been proposed to your child is actually correct.
And I think the way to do that, as I've said, is because it's rare that there's just one offer. So usually families are comparing and contrasting three or four different financial aid offers. And it may not be the financial aid office. It may also be the admissions office that needs to be contacted if it's a merit award that has nothing to do with need-based aid. And the criteria for merit scholarships are as different as those 4,000 colleges that are out there. Some don't offer any, and others offer merit awards that are leadership-oriented, and some are academic in nature and have to do with academic criteria. If you don't know what the criteria are, you cannot understand what the award is. So it's important if you don't understand or you don't know why you got a small amount from one and a larger merit award from another to call the admissions office and to ask that question as well.
And there's also nothing wrong with saying to the admissions office, I'm not negotiating, but College Y over here just gave me a financial aid offer of X amount of dollars. Would it be possible to revisit what you're doing? So the nuance of doing that in a polite way is reasonable, but still I think it's really fair for families to do that. Universities are going to give merit packages to students who they believe will be helpful to their student body. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to benefit your son or daughter. So there's nothing wrong with asking politely and talking about what you got from another university.
I guess I would suggest narrowing the number of colleges that you would have these type of conversations with, and to have first a conversation with your son or daughter and make sure that if there is a particular school that he or she is dead set on attending and it's going to be a financial stretch for your family, that that's where you should concentrate on having these types of discussions. In effect, if you're going to sort of go to the mat for your child, and then at the other side of the table, if the financial aid officer or the admissions officer is going to be a partner of yours in trying to make it possible for your student to attend that school, don't do it to them by doing this exact same thing with another school or three or four other schools. Concentrate on the school that your student really wants to attend and that you're highly supportive of his or her attendance, and do all you can within the month of April to try to make that possible. May 1st is what is known as National Candidates Acceptance Day. Maybe I got it wrong. I think there's a specific name for it. But May 1 is the deadline in which all colleges or universities are expecting to receive, and in fact, should receive, the notices of a student wanting to attend that school. And so all of these conversations that we've been talking about are occurring within a very concentrated period of time. That's why we're calling this show Crunch Time, because it's the month of April every year when these very emotional, very complicated decisions take place within a family and must reach a decision point by May 1st. So it's important that if you are going to go after a particular school as your school of your dreams, that you concentrate those efforts at that school and not try to price shop at every single school that you applied to.
And Jim, I think that's 100% right, because you're not going to have time to do all of this in that short amount of time. It's administratively very difficult to do what we're talking about, and it's not fair to students, it's not fair to parents, it's not fair to the institutions. I think if you're listening to this right now, I think Jim's advice is very good. Take the one or two schools that you really care about, focus on those, and try to narrow it down and then move it from there.
I think the other piece is you cannot talk about another student in your community, your neighborhood, or the school that you happen to know got a certain award, and you want to find out why your financial aid or your merit award isn't the same as that other person's. Admissions and financial aid people cannot discuss another student's award with you. And so taking that kind of attack will not help the process at all. But talking about your case and trying to understand it will actually be very, very helpful.
I guess in the last question, you sparked upon something, Jim. May 1st, the deadline to accept. can colleges revoke an admission offer to you? And if they can, why would they do that?
Students are admitted based on the academic record that they turn in on their academic transcript when they make the application. And when they get that admit letter, it says that this is based on your current academic status. And so the only thing that can change that and have a student have their admission letter revoked is if they didn't make that satisfactory academic progress. So they can indeed put a deposit down on May 1st. And then if they withdraw from courses or they don't do well in key academic courses, it could be they're going to get a call from that institution. It doesn't happen commonly, but it does happen if a student doesn't maintain that same academic progress that the college made the admission decision on.
And the besides the admissions part of this, the reason this is an important question is because you don't want students to kind of lose the momentum before they start university. I think students should have fun, and I think students should enjoy their senior years, and I think it's okay that students go to a party from time to time. I mean, all of those things are fine. But if a student who is an A student all of a sudden is failing some classes, not only is it bad, obviously, in terms of a possible admissions decision being revoked, but it's also bad for the student in terms of the momentum. This is a learning experience. We should be happy about where our students are going to go, and we should encourage students to be excited about that they're going to continue their learning in whatever field or fields they're interested in doing. So I would take this seriously. Try to keep your grades up as best you can. I realize the weather is about to get nice and people want to go and relax, but there's a point to relax and there's a point to relax a little too much.
I'm the one who brought up May 1st as a hard and fast deadline, but I guess I would add a comma but for this year, 2010, in that it's very likely that waiting lists are going to be widespread this year with the unpredictability of college admissions happening every year. And this year in particular, with students applying to more and more schools, with the economic uncertainty that's out there for students and their families, that a waiting list slot is something that a student should look at very carefully. And again, kind of to the point we made earlier, if you are waitlisted at a school that you really want to attend, what you should do right away is, once you get over that disappointment, is to write or call the admissions office for that school and to make it clear to them from day one that this is still your number one choice of school, and that there's no harm in doing that. And then as the season plays out, if you will, and for that particular school, if it comes to May 1st and they receive less than their expected number of acceptances by students who want to attend that particular school, the school may in fact go to its waiting list. And at the top of the waiting list it's hard to say exactly what all the factors are, but certainly a factor is a student's enthusiasm to attend the school and the student's performance in the second half of senior year, which could tip the scales in their favor. So students, have to take a rejection what it is. You're not going to turn a rejection around. But a wait list is kind of that netherworld situation where you don't have to give up right away. You can continue to express your desire to attend that school.
I think, Jim, it's important also for families to know that they should ask about last year's wait list and how many people were on that wait list, how many people were removed from it, and when they were removed from the waiting list, because they need that information in order to then make the decision about how much emotional investment they want to put on a waiting list. If they find out that no one was moved from a waiting list, even though they're going to establish another one this year, they should have that information so that it helps them in the decision-making process.
And I think it's also important to point out that ethically it's okay to keep your offer alive. So let's assume the University of ABC is your top choice school on May 1st. You're going to put down a deposit at that institution, and that you're holding a seat at that school, at that university. Now, if the wait list opens up, let's say in July, are you able to take it? And that's what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. So don't throw away all your offers and just say, well, maybe I'll just wait for the wait list to hopefully happen. It's reasonable and it's rational, and you are well within your rights, and you should keep that offer open. But if the waitlist in fact opens up later in the summer, I've had many students over the years who have gotten off the waitlist, but late in the summer, You have to be emotionally, psychologically prepared to jump and take that offer if you want to. And, some students make the choice that, you know, I'm already set with the other school and I've changed my mind. I'm okay with that. But I think that I advise my students to be open to that possibility in case the wait list does in fact come through.
Excellent. Excellent points. And I have to thank you, Marty, Steve, and Jim. This was a great conversation today. And unfortunately, we are facing our own crunch time today, so we need to bring this to a close. But I wanted to let all the parents and students who are listening to this podcast know that each of the members of our panel today have excellent websites that are excellent sources of information. Marty's is Colleges That Change Lives. She can be found at ctcl.org. Steve's is topcolleges.com. And Jim's is College Parents of America, which can be found at the website www.collegeparents.org. I want to thank all of you again. It's been an excellent conversation. I look forward to speaking with you soon. And everyone have a nice day. My name is Nathan Gregory, and this has been Crunch Time.
Thank you.